you can find ways to adapt. You can find other activities that might be similar to something that you like, but it doesn't mean you need to say no to all of the things in life that could bring you joy.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO at the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming injury through treatments that work, in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories you are not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal health care. This episode features spinal champion Rebecca, who underwent a series of treatments over many years, starting in grad school, in order to achieve a more pain-free life. Part of her journey was discerning which treatment options would serve her best after receiving multiple and different professional opinions. How did Rebecca choose her treatment? What's the best way to discern treatment in your own life? We're having a conversation about just that on today's episode. Now that you know what to expect, let's get back to it and dive right into Rebecca's story. Rebecca first experienced pain when completing her graduate studies for occupational therapy. Her symptoms included deep pain in her neck and shoulders, nerve pain radiating down her arm, and numbness in her fingers. Nothing was helping with the pain.
My pain was severe enough to impact my ability to sleep, focus, and do some of the activities that I both wanted and needed to do every day.
Rebecca already had a regular pain management regimen for her rheumatoid arthritis. She would use massage, stretching, exercise, and once per month visits to the chiropractor to manage her pain. Once she began experiencing neck pain and the other symptoms, she started visiting her chiropractor more often.
After ultrasound and traction from my chiropractor, he sent me for an MRI. I knew I needed to seek additional treatment when the pain was debilitating enough to limit my movement and sleep, two of the most important factors in my overall health.
After more chiropractic care, massage, stretching, spinal injections, ultrasounds, and physical therapy, Rebecca saw a neurosurgeon who ultimately performed an anterior cervical discectomy and fusion at cervical vertebrae 5-7 in her neck in 2006. That means two of Rebecca's vertebrae in her neck were fused together.
Post-surgery, I was feeling better, but years later, however, pain returned a little differently in 2017. In addition to severe neck and shoulder pain, I was now experiencing migraine-like headache.
Upon a physician-recommended MRI, it was discovered that Rebecca had a non-union at C5-6 from her previous 2006 surgery, and literally a loose screw.
I went to three different surgeons for an opinion on what I should do next, and I got three different opinions. My original surgeon was no longer located in the same state, and I needed to find a new one. Ultimately, I found a surgeon I trusted with my situation.
Rebecca went on to have more surgery in November of 2017, another anterior cervical discectomy and fusion at C4 and 5, as well as a posterior fusion with rods at C4-7. After one of the toughest surgeries and recoveries she'd ever had, the debilitating pain and nerve pain had dissipated. Rebecca was able to go about her normal activities with some limited movement.
Take care of your pain. There are many options out there, but at the end of the day, you have to be comfortable with your choices. It's important to do your research and get multiple professional opinions. Lastly, stay physically active and find some movement that will keep you strong, but also movement that brings you joy.
Rebecca, thank you for candidly sharing your experience and also practical advice that I think many in our community will benefit from. We had the honor of connecting with you through a partnership with the Arthritis Foundation, an organization similar to us at National Spine Health Foundation, in its work toward patient education and advocacy. In addition to your work at the Arthritis Foundation, you are an occupational therapist. So I find it fascinating to hear your own journey of working to get back to everyday activities and movements. How has your journey of healing and recovery shaped your work, both as an occupational therapist as well as your work at the Arthritis Foundation?
Well, I definitely think becoming an OT is where I learned the most about taking care of myself and how to protect my joints and manage pain and the importance of physical activity as part of my treatment plan. Living with arthritis in several different forms of it has really made me a better occupational therapist. From a healthcare provider perspective, I really do understand the patient perspective because I am a patient. So I think I have a couple hats I wear. I wear the hat of a patient. I wear the hat of an OT. I can never turn that one off.
Right.
Sometimes it's hard to follow through with my OT hat when I'm a patient and I'm not feeling the best and doing the things I know that I recommend to patients. But I've learned over the years of having different forms of arthritis, almost 20 years, that you have to give yourself permission to have those days of rest and permission to let your body heal when it needs to. But the most important thing is that you can get back to where you were. You might not get back to where you were before you weren't feeling well, but you know that you can build yourself back up. So working with the Arthritis Foundation now has really helped to amplify that patient voice, I feel. I feel like it makes it a great platform for me to be able to share my story as a patient, but also understand the information and the resources that we need to provide to our community.
I love hearing about that, Rebecca. And I, like you, had a fusion in my back. And now I'm dedicated to patient advocacy to help other patients understand that there are treatments, that there are treatments that work. Modern spinal health care is delivering incredible results for people to return to living their grateful lives. And with arthritis and working at the Arthritis Foundation and doing that advocacy, I have found myself being very passionate about the work that I do here for the Spine Health Foundation. And you and I share that story of having a fusion.
Yes.
I'm curious, Rebecca. I mean, we have this saying in the spine health world, don't fear the fusion, or using the F word, the fusion word. And, you hear over and over again, people kind of dance around having a fusion. And then ultimately the fusion is the thing that provides the definitive results for them. That can be the case for some people. How did you feel when your first surgeon told you that you were going to need to have a fusion in your neck? What was that like? What did that mean?
Well, it was devastating. Because I was in the middle of grad school. I was in the middle of my last year, had to still do all the field work after the fact, but I thought I was doing really well. And I thought, well, where did this come? It felt like it came out of left field. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to go through it. I struggled with the decision and I couldn't decide, is this something I really need to do? But I can't have this nerve pain. I can't live in this pain and I can't sleep and I need to be able to sleep so that I can study so I can finish grad school. And it was this whole cascading things that I was trying to think about. But at the time, because I was in OT school, I was working with one-on-one with a student who was a C5 quadriplegic and
wow.
He was injured just playing a fun game of football with friends. And now, bound to his wheelchair. And I found out about the suggestion for surgery and I was talking about it with him. And he looked at me and said, do you want to be me one day?
Oh my gosh.
And I hadn't even thought about it in that way. And the neurosurgeon did say, yeah, I mean, you could sneeze, you could trip on a curb, you could go skiing and fall, and it could cause more damage. Well, I didn't have to think again about it. He was right. I'm sitting here helping him learn how to adapt to his life in a wheelchair, and I'm contemplating whether or not I should have this surgery, and I have this pain. So I didn't think any more about it after talking with him, and I went ahead with it, and I was glad I did because when I woke up, the pain was gone.
Wow.
Yeah. And I didn't have the nerve pain. I have residual loss of a little bit of sensation in a couple of my fingers. I can still feel temperature changes and stuff like that, but I can feel that it's not the normal sensation. However, After I got out of that surgery, the neurosurgeon who used to teach neurosurgery said, in all my years, I've never seen anything like that. We were literally, there was a bony process that was 1 millimeter away from my cord because it had broken through the dura mater protecting your spinal cord.
Oh my gosh.
So he said, no joke, in your situation, you could have sneezed, you could have tripped on a curb, or you could have fallen and you would have a severed cord. So I am so glad. And his surgical nurse, who had also been performing surgeries for over 20 years, said, you are so lucky. And I, at the time, I think I was 31. And so he said, your spine looks like somebody's, like an 80-year-old spine. Like, I can't believe how much degeneration you have in there. And everybody couldn't understand, you know, did you have some kind of trauma, or, you know, how did your spine get this bad? And so in hindsight, right, hearing all of that, boy, am I glad I made that decision. Even though, fast forward to 2017, I started having more issues and it didn't end up fusing 5-6. Still, for many years, I went pain-free. So,
yeah, that's amazing. I'm curious, Rebecca, what caused your disorder in your bones and in your joints? What do you know? What led to that? Was it related to the RA, or?
You know, nobody could give me a definitive answer on that. So, being that I was in OT school, I started researching, you know, cervical spinal issues and rheumatoid arthritis, and I was seeing more and more that people reporting issues with their cervical spine or spinal issues. And then I started learning about all the other autoimmune inflammatory type diseases that are out there that can affect your spine. So then it didn't seem so far reaching to me.
Right.
I had been rear-ended a couple times in my early 20s, but it wasn't ever at a high speed. It was never anything that caused true whiplash or anything that caused any damage or really any pain. And so after seeing what my spine actually looked like, the neurosurgeon said, I gotta believe that osteoarthritis, degenerative disc disease, and your RA played a factor. So
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And one of the reasons why we are so excited about our collaboration with the Arthritis Foundation is that, you know, we know that arthritis and inflammatory disease is one of the leading causes of degeneration of the spine. And there's just not a lot of great information out there. And we are so committed and dedicated to getting information out to patients so that they can understand what's going on with their spines and what they can do about it. We do a lot of work on bone health, nutrition and wellness around, you know, bone strengthening. People don't think of their back as bone. And you know, those vertebrae are, you know, 33 bones going up, you know, up and down that comprise your spine. So bone health is really an important component of spinal health and overall wellness, you know, in general. So that's amazing. You know, something that struck me in your story, Rebecca, was the way that you emphasized getting multiple professional opinions before taking action on your surgery. And, you know, being a little bit in the field, you're in the healthcare field as an OT. You have some insight into how to find a surgeon or how to find a doctor. And I think that's a question that a lot of people have is, how do I know I'm at the right doctor for me? And how do I know that this is the right treatment for me? So, you know, I just thought maybe you could help us, help talk with us about what that was like for you. You know, how did you come to your decision on how to choose the right doctor both the first time and the second time? You know, were there tools or resources out there? If there had been a National Spine Health Foundation, would this have been something that you would have looked for? Can you share with us a little bit about that? And maybe, you know, in sharing how you approached finding the right doctor, that can help other people figure out, you know, the steps that they can take to find the right treatment.
Absolutely. I mean, as a healthcare provider, the first thing I think about is rapport. And then from a patient, how do I feel when I'm in the presence of this doctor? Does this doctor make me feel like he's listening to my needs? And that is really important. So for my first fusion, I actually did not get multiple opinions. I was younger. I was in the middle of grad school. I was busy. I think I had a pain management doctor aside from my chiropractor. And I really had a great relationship with my primary physician. And so in talking to my team that I already had and meeting this neurosurgeon that did it, I felt very comfortable with him. He really did a good job of explaining to me what the issue was, what the prognosis could be for me. And I did feel really good about it. And I don't regret that decision. It was in the revision or revisiting a fusion years later that I knew I needed to get multiple opinions. And in between that time, I had surgery on my wrists for my RA. And I had just started working as an OT. And my first opinion for a hand surgeon was like, I just had a baby, just started as an OT. And he said, we're going to completely fuse that wrist. That's the only thing that's going to work for you. And I went back to work and I was sharing that with my rehab team I worked with. And they were like, there's got to be other options. You need to get another opinion. And they encouraged me and gave me a list of other docs to see. And I did that. And I was so glad I did, because the surgeon who actually did my both of my wrist surgeries, his first question to me was, what do you want to be able to do when this is all said and done? And as an OT, he got me, right? Because he asked about my function, and I had my son with me, and he said, well, you're a new mom, you're a new OT. If we totally limit your dominant hand, that doesn't make sense. And so I learned from that experience how important it is to get multiple opinions. So when it came time to look at what's going on with my spine, the next round, I absolutely knew I had to get multiple opinions. The first opinion I got, he was basically going to do the same surgery that I had already done. He was going to do another ACDF, and he was going to do levels 4-7 to fuse above that 5-6. And so I actually had, okay, well, that makes sense. And I scheduled, but I had other appointments lined up. Went to the next one, and he's walked in very arrogantly and was like, so when did you dislocate that shoulder? And I was like a year and a half ago. And he's like, it's your shoulder. It's not your neck.
What?
Yeah. And I was like, no, it's not. I know my pain. I know my body. I know my pain. This is not my shoulder. This is my neck. I'm getting migraines. My shoulder pain wouldn't cause migraines. Not my shoulder joint pain would not cause migraines. Right. So, I turned around out of that office and left right away, because I was like, you didn't even ask me anything else about my pain. You know what I mean? And so the third opinion, I didn't feel good that I had two very different opinions. So I was like, I need to get another one. So I got a third opinion, and right away when the doctor walked in, I could feel his demeanor. It was comfortable. He was very approachable. He respected my pain, but he also respected the fact that I have a little more knowledge because I am an OT. And he sat there and he showed me the images. He talked about my options, and then he talked about my function and said, this is going to be a tough surgery if we do this. It is going to be hard because you can't be on your medications. And so he talked me through all that and made sure that I would be comfortable with the process of recovery and how it would limit work. And so the biggest thing he said is, why would we go back and do the same exact thing that didn't work the first time? And so the surgeon that wanted to do a repeat ACDF with adding in another level, I canceled that surgery and I went with him, because I'm like, you're right. Why would you go back and do the same exact thing that clearly didn't work the first time? And so it really was a long process. It took a few weeks for me to get through all of these opinions and get them scheduled. And but really, it came down to what made sense mechanically for my body and my function, but also bedside manner is so important to me. I mean, you're messing with my spine, and that's a scary area to be around. And if you're going through the front, you could damage my spinal cord. I want to know that you understand what my life is like, and that you understand the things I need to do when I come out of this on the other end. And so to me, almost just as important as their skill is the doctor's rapport that I have and the comfortability level I have in their bedside manner.
Right. You know, what's amazing about that, Rebecca, is that you're in pain, you're having these migraines, and you just want it to end. You know, you just want the pain to end. You just want to fix it. You just want to get an answer and get it done. And yet you took the time, you took several weeks to make that decision. And I think that's so wise and that is so admirable. And that is such a great lesson for people who are going through something similar to what you're going through, is that just take the time to get it right. You know, that's something that comes from, you know, what you said, that this is your spine. This is your neck. This is your spine. Got to get it right. You know, I think that's just a very, very wise set of actions that you took that people should think about when they're interviewing doctors for themselves. And that, you know, you talk about the rapport, and I love what you said about, you know, the doctor came in and asked you, what do you want to do with your life? You know, what functions are important to you? And having that conversation, that just gave you such a level of comfort and also confidence that the surgeon was really thinking deeply about what the right treatment is for you, because every patient is different. Right. Every fusion is different. Every body is different. And what might work for one patient doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for the next patient. So having a surgeon that takes the time to get to know you and really understand your life and your lifestyle and your needs is really, really a good vetting, you know, process in terms of understanding that this is someone who's going to understand what my needs are.
Right? Yeah. And he took a holistic approach too. And he actually, I think the others didn't really talk about it as much. I brought it up. He addressed my rheumatoid arthritis as well. Mm-hmm. You're going to be off your medication for this amount of time before and after surgery. And because of the history of a failed union, history of a non-union, we definitely want you off any NSAIDs for a period of time. And so how do you feel about that? How do you think right. your body is going to respond knowing, you know, you've had multiple surgeries? And the fact that he was thinking holistically about my health really made a mm-hmm. difference too.
Yeah, that's amazing. The whole sort of the whole picture of wellness and your whole, you know, the holistic approach. I'm glad you brought that up, because I did want to ask you about, you know, having this pain and this challenge in your neck sort of layered on top of your rheumatoid arthritis and, you know, managing the chronic pain that you have with the RA, you know, and then you put this picture of the neck pain and the degenerative condition in your neck that needed surgical treatment ultimately. As you were going through that and thinking about the complexity of your case, was there anything that in particular gave you hope? That you were going to get better, that you were going to get back to your life?
Well, with this last surgery on my spine, it was a rough go. It was probably one of my hardest surgeries. And I've to date have had 14, six or seven related to my arthritis. And so I've not my first rodeo, you know? And so yeah. I kind of know what my body does in surgery. And I know what it can do in between when I'm doing well. Uh-huh. And so really, I think it's when you have chronic pain, you get to a point where you know that you have built some resilience. Mm-hmm. There are days where you know you have too much pain and you should just rest. But you know that even though that happens, a couple weeks ago maybe I went on a 3-mile walk and I was fine and I had no pain. Right. So I think I try to look at the bigger picture of what I have been able to do in the past, despite my mm-hmm. pain yeah. and hang on to that hope. I know that I've been in situations where I couldn't really do anything. There was a couple years, about 5 years ago, hitting middle age, right? So I'm like, I have this bucket list of things I want to do. And there's a 10K here in Colorado that I wanted to do called the Boulder Boulder. And I'm not a runner, don't get me wrong. I'm a fast walker and I can kind of jog.
That's awesome. That's
but
great.
I had a goal to do that. And I have had a goal to hike all these different hiking trails I wanted to do here in Colorado. And so with those goals, I had to become more active. And you know what? Those were probably the best couple years I felt when it came to my RA. And that was after my first spinal surgery. And I was doing really well. And when I looked at lab work recently, my rheumatologist and I, the lab work that we do, you can now graph it. And she can look at several years at a time. And we can see that look, in these years, your inflammation rates were really low. I wonder, what do you think you were doing in that year? And I did the math and I realized it was those were the years I was hiking a lot and I was walking and jogging a lot to prepare to be able to do that 10K. And it was a 2-year period where I was doing really well. And then you see it come back up and climb back up. All my inflammation markers climb back up because that's when I started having more spine pain again. And I was, my RA meds weren't working as well. And we had to switch medications. And so
activity level goes down.
And my activity level goes down. Exactly. So it's, I know that it's hard to get there sometimes if you are especially in a ton of pain for an extended period of time to get back to saying, okay, I can go on a walk again. I need to move my body. I know I literally have my own evidence from my own lab work to show me that I was doing much better when I stayed physically active.
And we say that all the time at the National Spine Health Foundation, that there's one simple thing to do to improve your wellness, to take care of your spine. It's to move.
Yes.
You know, and
just
you don't
move.
Have to run, just move. And movement is medicine. And that's amazing that you have your own personal data to prove that. But it's hard to move when you're in pain.
Yeah.
It's counterintuitive, and yet movement can help reduce and in some cases eliminate pain. So it's like the movement will help to overcome the pain. But in some situations, like with your neck, you know, challenge, you needed the surgery to eliminate the pain to be able to get moving again. And
right.
And speaking of that, you recently were kayaking. And I'm just amazed that, less than 3 years after this second big operation in your neck, you are so active and you're out there kayaking and you had an accident and with your kayak. And
yeah.
Tell us about that. Rebecca, tell us, I'm so sorry that happened, but it's actually an amazing story of your recovery from your neck issues. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I actually dislocated my shoulder about 4 years ago hiking. So I like the outdoors. I live in Colorado. And, you know, if there's anything that isn't going to stop me, it's going to be, I need to be outdoors, right? And so pain, I can have all the pain, but I'm going to find a way to be outdoors because that's my therapy. And the first time I dislocated it, we were a mile into a hike at a waterfall and I dislocated it and I somehow managed to just sit up, take a deep breath and roll my shoulders back and it popped back in. I still had to go to urgent care and
oh
I still
gosh.
Had to get MRI and all that, but it wasn't anything that needed surgery at the time. So fast forward to a couple of weeks ago on Father's Day, we thought we'd have an enjoyable day with some family and friends. And we have this inflatable kayak and my husband and I ran it and he does all the power rowing, you know, but there's a little part where there's rapids and we tipped. And we tipped, and as we tipped, we didn't realize there was like a dual part of rapids. My legs hit rocks, and I was reaching forward to grab the kayak, and my shoulder went out. And so I felt it because then trying to swim, I couldn't move my right arm, and I was swimming one-handed, and I was yelling for help for my husband, and he was struggling because his foot got caught in the kayak, and so he got free and he swam to me, and he basically pushed me over to the bank of the river onto some rocks. And I look down and I'm like, oh, yeah, my shoulder's out, because I could see the head of the humerus out.
Oh, no.
And oh, so no. Had to walk probably a quarter of a mile or more to get to a place where we could call a Lyft or Uber driver to come get me, to take me to the ER. Because this time I wasn't as lucky to be able to take a deep breath and roll it back and get it back in. It was way out. So I had an ER visit and had to be sedated to get it put back in. And the thing now, I am facing surgery because I did tear my rotator cuff.
Oh, my God.
So, yep.
More shoulder pain.
One on the way. I know. It's crazy. And so I think about this, and I've had people say to me, well, maybe you just can't do these things anymore. You know, maybe kayaking and being outdoors and hiking isn't your thing because you get injured. And my response is no, this is not what I preach. Like, this is... I work for the Arthritis Foundation. Our motto is live yes, right? We want people to be able to live yes. We have to say no to so many things. And I'm an OT. Just because I got injured in this doesn't mean that I can't find a way to adapt. And this was a fluke. You know, right. I can find a way to adapt to do activities I want to do. If people who, there's adaptive skiing. People who are in wheelchairs can ski. I can sit in a kayak and row. Yeah. I can figure it out, right? You know, and so I go against that when people say, I'm like, no, don't tell me that I can't do something because of my pain or because of my arthritis. That's exactly not what I want to hear. And that's exactly why I keep fighting. And that's why I want other people to realize too that you can find ways to adapt. You can find other activities that might be similar to something that you like, but it doesn't mean you need to say no to all of the things in life that could bring you joy. So yeah, that was
so beautifully said. That's so beautifully said, Rebecca. That's so true. And oh my goodness. You know, you know what shoulder pain, you're going to be an expert on shoulder pain because you know what the nerve generated shoulder pain feels like, and now you know what rotator cuff shoulder pain feels like, and you're going to get over it. You're going to get that surgery. You're going to get your rotator cuff fixed, and you're going to get back to your life. And I'm just, I'm so inspired by you.
Oh,
so inspired
you.
By you. Just amazing. Just say yes, right? Do it. Go for it.
Yep.
And you're doing it. That's amazing. So excited. Rebecca, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you today. Your story paints the picture that ultimately it's up to the patient to make an informed decision on what treatment is best for them and their lifestyle. Thank you for the work you're doing as an occupational therapist, and thank you for your work at the Arthritis Foundation to help others live more fulfilling lives. We wish you the very best, and we look forward to staying connected with you. Any last words of wisdom to share with us today?
No, I just say, as hard as it can be sometimes, just keep moving. We can't lay around and sit on the couch all the time if we're having pain, even if it means just getting up and going to the kitchen or going down the stairs or walking in circles around the dining room table. Whatever little you can do, even if it's stretching from your chair or the couch, just move a little bit. And the more you build on that, you'll be able to find your way to doing more. But most importantly, find some movement that's going to bring you joy.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, Rebecca. At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain each year. To hear more stories of recovery and access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in hearing from the nation's leading experts on a variety of spine health related topics, visit spinetalks.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening.
The information and views expressed in the Get Back to It podcast are intended for informational purposes and should not be used as a substitute for professional medical advice or to replace the services of trained healthcare providers. To view the National Spine Health Foundation's full disclaimer, visit spinehealth.org.